5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 14th of September, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And?
Oh.
I'm out of here.
That's Alex Vanderweel. Which I believe is Dutch for
lovely
it's my
windmill
mill and keep your dang hands off it. I'm pretty sure. Something quite along those lines. And as you can tell, we're here, we're on the web today, but we are not live over the air. And the reason for that, of course, is because once again, the Buffalo Bills are in fact playing. And of course, that couldn't possibly thrill Chris any more than he is already thrilled.
They're actually doing good. They won their first game, so that's good for them, you know.
So they're ahead of last season.
Yeah.
I don't want to know anything about football as long as there's baseball still to be watched.
That's exactly it. That's it. I'm with you. I'm a big fan of, I beg your pardon, I'm a big fan of baseball myself. Not big enough fan that I watch it or know who any of the players are, but I like the game.
That's right up there with watching paint dry.
I read a really neat football science fiction gangster story. About this kid from the minor leagues who was the star player and got his shot to go up to the big leagues, which were all run by gangsters who used the trade routes between games to smuggle their drugs. And all the other players were aliens, and this poor human who was had been taught all his life to hate the aliens. The linebackers were 1,000 pounds
that
and 12
football,
feet long. Football, yeah.
That's when you said baseball.
You were on baseball. I went back to football.
Oh, back to football.
Hey, the linebackers are 1,000 pounds and had 12 arms, and the wide receivers could jump 25 feet in the air and run, you know, the 40-yard dash in 3 seconds.
Right.
And it was a really interesting science fiction story with a football beat.
Yep.
And actually, they got real football commentators to do some of the play-by-play during the games when the guys were getting killed by those 1,200-pound linebackers.
Right. All right, so let's start with a news story here. We have, for those of you who've been hiding under a rock on Mars... The Apple iPod. Apple introduced a whole bunch of new, or at least updated, iPods. Steve will talk about those in a minute. Interestingly, some analysts are trying to put the iPod into perspective. Apple is clearly becoming less compelling as a product range, but will still deliver 20 million Windows switchers a year to the Apple Fold, according to Needham & Company analyst Charlie Wolf. It's important to place the iPod in perspective. Through the iPod halo effect, it continues to convert Windows users to the Mac platform, but the product has reached the mature phase of its life cycle with annual sales of 50 million units, slowing to a high single, low double-digit growth rate. The analyst noted the product continues to gain market share in some territories and added, we estimate that 20 million or more Windows users will join the iPod nation annually over the next few years. That ain't hey, folks. And potentially fall under the sway of the iPod halo effect, which is great for Mac sales. In related news, American technology research analyst Sha Wu last week warned that Apple's recently revealed iPod Touch price cut may not be far enough, saying, while we're pleased to see lower pricing, we are convinced that price points may remain too high, given the tough macroeconomic environment and relative to the G3 iPhone at $199 and $299. Who expects Apple to sell 11 million iPods in the current quarter and 24 million in the ever-active Christmas December quarter. The analyst also points out that while the iPod is a mature product, the company still has plenty of growth opportunities in its Mac and its iPhone segments, and that despite recession, enough high-end consumers are still buying tech. And now, we'll turn it over to Steve to get all the hype
I just find
the new iPod.
I just find it interesting that their sales growth figures are 20%, and that's bad. It doesn't make any sense. Wall Street's just screwy.
Well, they were predicting 30.
Yeah, so...
And they got 20.
They fell below.
So that's bad.
That's bad.
See, it's not that they're making money. They're not making enough money.
Enough money, yeah.
Wait a minute. Am I missing something here? I thought
always, Dave.
Well, that's true when it comes to the Mac. But anyways, I thought they did computers. It seems like you're hearing less and less about computers.
Actually, yeah, because a year ago they took computer out of their name. They're officially now just Apple Incorporated.
Right.
Because four devices they sell are not computers.
Right.
I mean, most of the time, he'd always be the monthly system that was going to come out. I haven't heard him talk about any new and great machines on the horizons. You know, the OS came out. What was it? Leopard 7.
Leopard was last year.
But I mean, as far as machines, actual boxes that you were bringing in and, you know, showing us the latest and greatest, it's just not being there. And it seems like their focus is going more towards the iPhones, the iPods, and now the iTunes.
Apple the last time they did it, Dave, they got it right.
Yeah, right.
Well, actually, that has been a problem in the Mac industry. They haven't come out with new machines in a while, and there's this huge pent-up demand.
The real problem is Apple has two main product lines and two ancillary product lines. They sell an operating system, and ancillarily they sell machines that run that operating system. And they sell a digital audio player, and ancillarily they run a store from which you can buy music for that digital audio player and other things that let you play music around the house and stuff like that.
Those are the two main products.
Consumer electronics is getting much bigger than their actual computer sales.
Well, this is where, take away from what they're doing, but what I was leading up to was last week we had a story how this other company was sitting there trying to, maybe help them still push the OS for them by building, you know, other machines and selling the operating system. That just by selling that operating system is more sales, which would, bottom line, Apple, help their revenue. I mean, how can it be a negative?
Apple tried that a few years ago when they were legally licensing clones, and what they discovered is they sell the operating system for $130, they make $30, $40. They sell a computer with the operating system on it, they make $300 or $400.
But the real problem becomes
it's against their marketing plan and their business issues.
But the real problem becomes if they're not going to build new machines,
we're expecting new computers by Christmas.
You expected to see them now,
Well, and
you expected to see them 6 months ago,
with the school rush.
That was interesting too. The Apple's back to school deal this fall, this summer, was a free iPod. Up to $299.
iPods, not computers.
Right. Well, iPods when you buy a computer.
Right.
And the joke is that we knew there were new iPods coming before Christmas. The new iPods that came out this past week are not eligible for that deal. You have to buy the old iPods. And we know that's because they were clearing out inventory of the old one so they can come out with a new one. We expect in the next couple of weeks new computers are going to come out. You know, we'll wait till the press...
we'll wait till we actually see them personally because you've been expecting them for a year.
We wait till the press dies down on the iPods. Because Apple, one thing, is a master of press. You know, they only announce one thing at a time because they don't want their press releases and the news overshadowed by too many products. And that's one thing they ran into last, July, August, when the iPhone 3G came out and MobileMe came out and the new iPod software came out. And what was the fourth thing? They released four major things. That wasn't part of it. It was all related around the iPhone. They released four major things on the same day, and three of them didn't work. And MobileMe still doesn't work right for syncing with Outlook and Exchange, which they need to get working for the Windows Enterprise users to adopt the iPhone.
But my bottom line is like I said, and this is what I was trying to lead around to help boost their sales, even if it is only making $30. $30 is still $30,
cannibalizes,
and it helps their bottom line.
It cannibalizes sales of their computers, which is why they killed the
they're not selling
the
their computers
time.
As it is. I mean, because there's
their computer sales are way up.
They're
buying their computers.
New models have been overdue. The Mac Mini's overdue for replacement. The MacBook is overdue for replacement. There's a website called Mac Tactic that tracks when the last models came out and how soon they're likely to be replaced. So most of the Apple models are overdue for replacement because the last revisions were early spring. So as we get into the Christmas buying season, which starts, you know, in September now. In fact, Halloween was up before Labor Day.
Halloween was up shortly after 4th of July.
I expect them to skip Thanksgiving again and just go right to Christmas.
Thanksgiving is not a big selling season. Yeah. You know, once you got the turkey and the cranberries, what are you buying? Thanksgiving. It's only an American holiday.
Yeah, well, I remember as a kid, though, you didn't see one Christmas decoration or anything else come up until after Macy's Day Parade.
Yeah, the day after Thanksgiving.
Right. That's when Santa came.
When it should still be.
Yep. The other thing that Apple and many of the other computer companies have found is that if you know there's a new model coming, you stop buying the old ones.
Right.
So Apple traditionally would release models at the Macworlds, the spring Macworld in San Francisco and the summer one in Boston. So people would stop buying new machines a month or two before the trade shows.
Right.
And sales died. And so Apple basically, and most of the other, same thing with PC Worlds and Comdex and PC Expo, they stopped waiting for conventions and shows to release new machines.
Do they even still do those shows?
I think, Comdex and PC Expo are gone.
Yeah, a lot of them are gone.
Macworld's about the only trade show left.
I mean, there's CBIT and there's Demo and there's actually a bunch of them.
They're smaller, not the huge giant ones we were used to in the
180,000 people at Demo, but still.
And in Europe, they're a lot bigger too.
Yeah, they're still big in Europe.
Yeah.
Also, Apple late on Thursday re-released iTunes 8 for Windows to roll back a buggy driver that had been bricking Windows Vista PCs with the dreaded blue screen of death crashes since Tuesday. In a support document posted around 8:30 p.m. on Thursday, Apple urged Vista users who had been unable to synchronize their iPods or iPhones using iTunes 8, I'm tired of the eyes, to uninstall both iTunes and an Apple-provided device driver, then download and reinstall the entire 75-megabyte package yet again. So you had to uninstall everything, download and reinstall everything. From Vista's Uninstall a Program control panel, users could ditch the Apple mobile device support driver as well as iTunes itself, then restart the PC, re-download and install the updated iTunes 8 installer. From www.apple.com/iTunes/download, said Apple, do not use the iTunes 8 setup or the iTunes 864 setup file you previously downloaded. Users running Vista had reported problems almost as soon as the updated iTunes 8 was posted for download Tuesday. Apparently, nobody tested it on Vista. According to scores of users on the Apple support forum, plugging in an iPod or iPhone caused Vista to crash. Don't you think Apple's tech support and QA people should have caught the fact that when you plug an iPod in, it crashes the system?
Definitely. Especially, percentage-wise, there are more Windows people using iPhones than Mac people because there are more people using
PCs,
Windows then.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, so.
According to several sources, Apple simply dumped the buggy versions of their system files and swapped in the older versions. So the users who uninstalled and reinstalled said the process did the trick. Others, however, knocked Apple for not reissuing iTunes under a different version number. God, what a disaster, said one blogger. Now we have two different versions of software and drivers that have the same version number. Was there any way to handle this more incompetently? And that's an understandable sentiment when you talk to people who really rely on version numbers. For example, we have automated installer routines at the Saunders College of Business. And we rely on the version number to tell us whether they need a new version of that software. And if the version number remains the same over what I consider a really major upgrade, like it used to crash the system and now it doesn't, not changing the version number is at base stupid. And at a high level, willfully incompetent.
Despite being a Mac user, I'm not a Mac apologist, but this is not unprecedented because we also used to, and in fact, I remember very specifically in Windows 95, we had the same version number. I'm sorry. Yes, the same model and version number of software. And then we had to look at the build number of a piece of software. So it's not unprecedented.
Well, but even the build number didn't change. And it wasn't right when Windows did it either.
Well,
just because somebody else jumps off a bridge, do you have to jump off a bridge?
See, iTunes didn't change. One of the drivers did.
Don't go there.
Sorry.
Don't even pretend to go there.
Yep.
Don't even pretend to go there. I just think, I'm sorry, but I got to place this squarely on the QA people, the testers at Apple. Did nobody plug the thing? This is the same problem I have, and I'm saying it out loud. This is the same problem I have with people who build websites and don't test it in every browser.
Well,
at least the three main ones.
And each platform too. The problem we had in the podcast this week worked fine in Safari for Mac, Safari for Windows, Firefox for Mac, and Firefox for Windows. Didn't work. I'm sorry. Firefox 2 and Firefox 3 for Mac did not work in Firefox 3 for Windows or IE for Windows.
Right.
So on six different browsers, it worked on four of them.
Right.
And the feed, the XML code. The audio file was fine.
I could have sworn I had taken out the
ampersand.
I searched for ampersand. I missed one. I apologize.
And I usually check for them, but I haven't needed to the last few weeks.
Right. Oops. Right. Yeah,
the problem is our first week of doing that last week. I mean, this is
everything's
totally
a little discombobulated.
Well, this is like we warned folks ahead of time. This was something new, surely experimental for us because
I left her at home. No.
She's listening.
She followed you.
But I mean, so we're gonna stumble. I mean, so shoot us.
Yeah, right. Well, but yeah, people do rely on the broadcast. We have hundreds and hundreds of people download the podcast every week.
Well, that's
and that's just off our website. I have no idea what the numbers are on iTunes or any place else.
Well, you had me down there for a rant, but instead of doing the rant because we don't have the music and all that stuff anyways. But just to tell folks, yes, right now folks are getting upset. Oh, you're not around and, you know, what'd you do, disappear and everything else. If the folks that are listening to this webcast, at least go to our forums. The three of us have been trying to be due diligence in trying to keep stuff up to date there, letting you know what's happening on the web, you know, what's going on, and not to leave you in the dark. But, you know, if you're not going there and checking, you know, where we tell you to go, we can't help you. It's the old adage, lead you to water, but we can't make you drink.
And we have a post on our front page. It says we're not on air today. Might need to be bigger and bolder.
I think you're probably right. I'm just looking at it now and thinking, yeah, nobody reads things if they're not, you know, circled and underlined and big arrows pointing at them.
Well, maybe we need it in like a neon so it flashes
right
type of stuff.
And maybe we need when somebody goes to the homepage, a voice says, we're not on the air today.
That'd be cool.
Read the page.
We're not on the air, but we're on the webcast. By the time you hear this, we'll be too late to listen to the webcast.
But
when you hear this, it will be the webcast.
Exactly. And it'll still be the podcast.
It will still be the podcast.
After it's the webcast. So I think we're all good to go.
There's still some flesh on that dead horse.
Yeah. So let's keep vlogging.
But what I'm trying to say, though, is, you know, bottom line, we haven't abandoned you folks. We're still here. We're just trying to do a workaround right now because, you know, Wham was fortunate enough to get the Buffalo Bills back. And we still are lucky that Wham has allowed us to still come in and, you know, like Nick was saying last week, still to be here.
God bless them. They give us this forum every week. You know, they could easily have said, well, you know what? The Bills are taking over your time slot. Take a break.
Yeah, take the 11
But they didn't.
Weeks
they
off.
Said, we know how important this show is to your listeners. We know how much your listeners appreciate that it's on. So we're going to do what we can to make it stay on. Even though the Bills are going to be actually on the air. So God bless them for that. I can't say anything bad about it.
They're one, giving us a full hour, no commercials, that we're going just ranting here for an hour. So this is why, again, once you hear this this webcast and that, we're encouraging folks, if you have questions, post them there in the forums because we're going to be reading those. And if you email us with questions. Nick also has a thing up on the island at Soundbites where you can leave questions. So this is the perfect opportunity. You know, I hear it all the time. Well, I don't have the time to call into Soundbites and I had a question. Leave them in one of those three places and we'll read it now over these next, 9 weeks. So it's a great opportunity that you can't sit there and say, well, I never get a chance to get the question and answer. We will be reading them.
Right, and Dave has a bulletin board thing up there. You can leave a message on the bulletin board for us to read on the air. So there's all kinds of ways to get your questions to us.
We haven't, on the Soundbites main page, there isn't an email us button, partly because we can't take questions too far off the air, but mostly because it gets crawled by robots and filled with spam.
But on the contact page,
it's there. You can email us. And again, we also created within the forums a place where you can put your question, and as we read them, I delete them. So don't get upset that the question is gone. It's because we already addressed that question on the web. It's just a central forum where you can put in a question. Once we read it, I delete it. And that way the list won't get too long.
Right, and speaking of Second Life, this week's poll is about Second Life. We do every Friday night, and that will come up on the thing now, too. Every Friday night, right now starting at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m., we're on Second Life for an hour or more answering people's computer questions. So if you are on Second Life or you want to connect to Second Life through the web thing I set up, I'll talk about that in a minute, you can get to us there as well, and that's Friday nights. But this week's poll is about what time on Friday nights. We are meeting at 10.
Eastern Standard Time.
That's right. Eastern Standard Time. We're big in Norway. So for those of you in Norway who want to join in, it's in English. And we meet at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is probably, I don't know, Husker Du or something in the morning over there. I just alienated all 27 people who listen to us in Norway. I apologize to each and every one of you individually and collectively.
Do we have any listeners in Spain, do you know?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I think we do.
I could entertain them that way.
Do you have your accordion? Will you do Lady of Spain?
If you hum a few bars. Oh, that one, sure. Okay. My harmonica.
The choices are 8 p.m., 9 p.m., 10 p.m. I don't care. Any time is fine. Wait, sound bites in Second Life now. I don't care. Don't do Second Life. And I don't do time, man. So far, we've got about 54 votes in the forum. And don't care. Don't do Second Life is winning. But don't care. Anytime is fine is just behind it, but right behind that is 8 p.m. I don't know that I'm going to go with 8 p.m., but I might be willing to go with 9. And for those of you who don't do Second Life, that doesn't mean you can't join in. What you'll see is a link. For example, on our front page right now, the third paragraph down says, if you can't join us in Second Life from 11:45 a.m.-ish to 1 p.m., why not join us on the web? And that will bring you a link to a page that I am still in the process of working on. It works now, so now I have to rewrite the whole thing in JavaScript so you don't have to keep hitting enter to see what new stuff has been done. Mm. But right now what happens is anything that someone types in Second Life will be echoed on the web page, and anything you type will be echoed in Second Life. So you can follow the discussions that way. Now, the problem with that is that the three of us tend to talk in Second Life, and unless we are much better at typing as we talk, you're going to miss some things. I'm trying to figure out how to fix that. There's no way to get voice from Second Life.
Well, we're trying to figure out how to record it, too. We can record Second Life noise, but recording the speech on top of that isn't working that well.
Right. So we're trying to figure it all out. It's all new to all of us. It is a VoIP connection if there's some sort of real-world VoIP connectivity.
Well,
thing.
Maybe if some folks out there might have some suggestions.
Exactly, because there are people out there who know way more about this stuff than we do.
Yeah, amen to that one.
So at any rate, you can join us on the web for in at least a partial way. And anybody who asks a question by typing, we will answer by typing as opposed to speaking the answer, because clearly the people out on the web, and we'll know whether the question comes from a local person or someone on the web. So we'll answer them that way. So we're trying to do our best to make this usable by everybody. We'll see how well it all works. That whole web thing is still very alpha code. I knocked it together in an hour while I had a cold, so I'm not entirely certain how robust it is, but it does work.
What a way to spend your birthday.
Exactly.
You're down
exactly.
and out.
Exactly. Well, you guys are coming up, so.
Yeah.
That's how that works. So
how was your birthday, Nick?
What?
How was your birthday?
It was wonderful, and we're actually celebrating it this afternoon. We're all going out to dinner. We usually do it the nearest Sunday.
Where are we going?
I'm not telling you, so because I don't care if you all show up, but my wife will. So I now have to care whether or not you show up. But my father-in-law is in the process of selling his house. If anybody wants gracious country living in Stafford, New York, out near Leroy, today's the day to go look. Randall Road, 3559, I think. What?
Now it's an open house.
It is an open house. That's the idea.
Yeah.
Go take a look at the house. Put in a bid. It's a beautiful old house. They have a stone fence out front. And the story is that as it was being built, somebody came down the road on a horse and told the guy building it that Abraham Lincoln had been shot. So that's an interesting, it's kind of an interesting little story. So that's that kind of thing. And you know what? We have a whole brand new feature we're trying out, and we figured out let's try it out on the web today. Our very own Chris Reich, who, as you all know, for some sick, demented reason, only known to him in his own little mind, comes in here every week and generously gives of his time and his talent to record every blathering we have and actually make us sound way better than we deserve and create the podcast for us so that at least there we sound more like professionals.
And
as long as you don't listen to the content.
Fun.
What?
It's a great deal of fun. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, it's all right. But he not only does that, but he is also a freeware guru. We used to have many, many years ago, Paul Casarino, the great yes. Paul Casarino, used to come in and talk about shareware gems.
Gem of the week.
Gem of the week. And we don't have much shareware anymore, really. There's still some out there. But there's a lot more freeware. And Chris is going to talk about the freeware. Now, we haven't even really produced this segment. There's no intro music, outro music, nothing. No. I'm just going to say, take it away, Chris, and he will then talk about some freeware product. That's how professional, no matter how hard you work, Chris, this week is not going to sound as professional as some of the others should.
Right, but I can always fix this in post. And yes. We'll do it. We have to. I can re-record my segments.
You're right. And now, ladies and gentlemen, whether he's live or on Memorex, Chris Reich with Freeware of the Week.
Thank you. Yeah, well, of the many things that I've been called and the many things that I am, News Junkie is among them. And what I want to talk about today is a program called Miro. Now, some of you may remember the free media player used to be called Democracy, the Democracy player it was known as. It has since then evolved into what's now called Miro, that's M-I-R-O, which at least in Spanish, and I'm guessing in Latin, means I look, because it's not only a media player, it is a content aggregator. And right now, Steve's pulling it up, the last time I looked, they claim to have 5,050 channels available. What they call channels is really content sites that create content. About 10% or so of them are called archive because they're no longer having new episodes posted. But among the 5,000 and some odd channels available, there's a lot of news, there's comedy, there's old cartoons, movies, there's anime, all kinds of different things you can get. There's strings on Linux, FreeBSD, all kinds of technical information. CNET provides content on there, and almost all of this is video. There's just a small handful that's in audio, but those are also almost all universally also available in iTunes, so there's really not much need to get them in Miro. But I find Miro a much better way to aggregate video content than iTunes is, because I can separate my libraries and keep the episodes of the video that I want to keep separate from my iTunes library. I also keep them in separate hard disks so that I'm backing up only what I want when I want. Now, the great thing about Miro is if you have your own video content that you want to publish, they give you ways to do it. If you go and get Miro, and do that by going to getmiro.com, that's getmiro.com.
Ding!
Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed that, Nick. Go to getmiro.com, download Miro. You can get a short tutorial on how to use it. There's also page after page after page of easy instructions on how to upload your content and how to keep your content updated in Miro. So I highly recommend Miro. It's a great waste of time. If you've got a lot of time, you will find more stuff on there to watch. We also have cable TV in my place, and I don't even turn on the television anymore.
I watch Miro regularly. So until you get your downloads capped,
right,
you'll be able to play with Miro a lot, and it's a pretty neat product.
Actually. So in between broadcasts of the news on WHAM, I go to Miro, and that's where I get all my news and other entertainment.
Nice tie-in. Very well done.
Until next time, hail Fredonia.
Hail Fredonia, land of the brave and free. All right.
We'll explain that to Steve later.
You're right. No, there's nothing to do with Futurama. Absolutely nothing. It has to do with Pastorama.
That was Robone. Futurama.
No. Fredonia. All right. We have a couple of questions off of the website. This first one may be tongue-in-cheek, but I think it is something we should be talking about. Srekus has a question. How many of you knew that Srekus was suckers spelled backwards? Okay. I'm sorry. Was I supposed to keep that a secret? I have a question, actually. I'm in dire need of a petabyte hard drive and was wondering when they might be available. Thanks.
Whenever your local pet shop comes out with them.
Yeah. Well, Seagate is among the first, but I'm sure all the other drive vendors will follow, has released a 1.5 terabyte hard drive.
So if you put 1,000 of those together.
Well, interesting.
Yeah, well, 600 and some odd, yeah.
At the National Association of Broadcasters last year, I think it was, Apple traditionally has a huge booth showing off their Final Cut video production suite. They put together a 750 terabyte drive array, because you need that when you're doing a feature-length Hollywood movie. So that's 3/4 of a petabyte. So we're almost there.
You're not going to get it in one drive.
For a while yet, yeah.
At least this week.
Yep. But you can certainly build the array to that point, and once you put it in like RAID 5 or whatever, you're definitely on your way.
Yeah. We're not sure we like that prefix, though. It's got some negative connotations. To
RAID 5?
No.
It's not
petabyte.
Petabyte.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
It's petabyte. Petabyte.
Right. Petabyte.
Petabyte.
Well, maybe they'll come up with something halfway between a terabyte and a petabyte.
What would they call it?
Halfway.
Yeah.
Half a petabyte.
Half a byte.
Half a tera.
Avery Brooks did a commercial for IBM years ago where he started rattling off all the prefixes, otabyte, nanabyte, exabyte.
Yadabyte.
And one of those weird words you sing. Those are the next prefixes.
Yep.
In fact, Exabyte Corporation sells tape drives. They've been huge in the commercial industrial tape drive business, except they don't come anywhere near an exabyte.
Yeah, I was just about to say. The first time I saw that, I said, they have exabyte tape drives?
I think when they started, a gigabyte was a lot.
Exactly.
And even now, a 100 gig tape deck is a lot.
Yeah.
Tapes are going by
no,
the wayside.
No. I have 400 gig drives. I have 400 gig tapes. Yeah. And I put 7 of them in a
robot chassis, yeah.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing that is, though,
10 of those in a rack.
With what I'm saying, though, is I'm seeing is more and more folks are going away from tape because hard drives are getting so cheap. You say, in a RAID, you could sit there and put a bunch of terabyte drives.
Yeah, you get a 1 terabyte drive and have a second 1 terabyte drive as your backup.
Yeah. Right.
But you two live in different worlds.
Actually, terabyte's getting to be common now. My half terabyte drive on my Mac is full because I'm downloading video. I was joking with Chris yesterday. I have 1,200 unwatched podcasts in my iTunes library.
We were talking about that last week. For God's sake, at some point you should sit down and say, this podcast is a year old and I will never listen to it.
iTunes stops updating them after a while, too.
Oh, my God.
But, I've got 300 or 400 gigs of video that I hope to watch someday. I won't mention the 5,000 videotapes I have in my basement waiting to watch.
And if you've got videotapes in your basement, you better watch them sooner. You're not going to find anything to watch them on.
But half a terabyte, 500 gig hard drives are very common and really, really cheap.
That's what I mean. And it's starting to slowly replace tapes because tapes are so expensive and you can only use them for so many months and then they wear out because they stretch and everything else. It's just getting very...
Remember when DLT came out, they were so excited that they had the tapes rated for 1 million passes.
Yeah, right.
And that means 1 million reads all the way around back and then read them again. And I asked them, well, how did you calculate that? Well, we did it 1,000 times over X days and then multiplied it out.
Yeah, right. We had this much wear, so to get to the wear to the point where the tape is useless, it's about 1 million. Yeah, good. We also had one from Ashcan. At what point would you need to consider going from the 256 megabyte video card to 512 megabit or larger? Or maybe better put, what would require a greater than 256 megabyte video card?
Your need for speed.
Need for resolution.
Yeah.
It says on the side of the box of the game you just bought.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. A lot of folks don't take the time, and we've preached this month after month after year, that folks have to take the time and read the side of the box. Because I've even had, and I'm sure Steve has had it too, where clients come in and say, I can't get this to run. And I quickly look at the side of the box and say, and what do you got in this machine? And they tell me, I go, well, it ain't going to run. You don't have enough horsepower.
It's like buying a Mac game and it won't run on your PC.
But the only thing they read was, it runs on XP. Yes. And then you got to read a little farther down. It says, this much memory, this type of video card.
Right. We had a discussion in Second Life about slot expansions. PCI Express seems to be the current expansion bus. We're past PCI and PCIX. Now we're on PCIe. But the SLI is coming, or it is out on some of the higher end. It's sort of an NVIDIA proprietary slot.
GPUs.
Right. You can combine two graphics cards together, and they can act as a single card. But we were looking at the specs of PCI Express. Currently can run about 8 gigabytes a second throughput. So that'll probably be around for a while. Yeah, it tends to be the video games that really push computer
video games, any sort of video editing.
Yeah.
Certainly, you can't get a high enough graphics card. You just can't. And when you do things like Second Life, if you want the very high-end look, whatever your video card is, you're missing something in Second Life, you've got a very high-end card.
We're also seeing a lot of doctors doing home x-ray viewing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when they look at some of the cross-sections of an MRI, there's hundreds of gigabytes of data that come down over the internet, so there goes their cap. And you need a really high-end video card. One of the doctors had a spec out 30-inch monitors that were, 5,000 pixel per inch?
Yep.
And the 30-inch monitor was $25,000.
Right.
And the company recommends two of them
right.
for viewing the x-rays.
Of course they do. Four is better.
Four is better, yeah. So, yeah, just these incredibly high-resolution monitors to view these very deep. A lot of you're looking at MRI, sometimes it's one pixel is the anomaly that cures the guy's cancer or diagnoses what's wrong with him.
Yeah, and those monitors, therefore, have to be much more perfect than the average monitor. You know, if you buy a laptop, what is it? You can have X number of dead pixels, and it's not a bad, they're not going to replace it.
Right.
Yep. Well, we get that question a lot, too, about televisions. If you can buy a 20-inch television for $100, a decent 20-inch monitor can be $300-$500 because you don't sit 6 inches from your television.
Right.
So you need a much, much higher. And we're seeing that now on the big flat screens. When they talk about the 1080p high-definition monitors, that means it has 1,000 vertical pixels. That's not much on a computer, but it's really big on a television. You know, right now on my little laptop, I'm running 1280 by 800, and that's a small 13-inch laptop. So
right.
I have an HD monitor in my laptop, but it's really small.
Right. But this is like I was saying, though. This is the only direction, like we were talking about Friday night, that's about the only direction they can go. The chips, they've gone to the dual core, the tri-core, and the quad core now, the Pentiums they're calling them. So they've pretty
much... Octa-core. Yeah, I want octa-core.
Well, they're going, that much. The next big leap is now to put another processor literally on the video card. Because you're also getting a lot of kids and folks that... Before doing animation, there's a lot of programs out there that you can do animation because now we have the power and tools to do it, and they're putting it into Civ 4 and the rest of these programs to do animation. That's where you're going to need a little higher end graphics card.
Well, but there have been GPUs on graphics cards for at least a decade, and one of the things that used to happen is, for example, was it Mathematica or... One of those programs would actually had a module that if you had the right kind of graphics card, it would use the graphics processor to do statistical analysis because it was faster at math than the CPU was.
Interesting you should bring that up because I just came across the day before yesterday, there's a distributed computing function, program, an application, client, that runs on the GPU chip of certain NVIDIA cards. And I'm sure as I mentioned this, Steve will call it up because I don't remember the name of the website.
Well, NVIDIA just came out with a whole new brand of GPU graphics card.
But this client doesn't even run on the CPU because the GPU is so
much faster.
Good at the processing of this particular type of calculation.
Yeah, that's been going on for a very long time. The things that run the shaders and all that other stuff, that's all GPU, and it's been on for a while. Hey, that seems to be Apple Day today in the news.
Yeah,
Apple Week. Apple has finally admitted that a British man who left school at 15 is the inventor behind the iPod. Kane Kramer, who is 52 years old, a mere youngster, came up with the technology that drives the digital music player nearly 30 years ago, but has still not seen a penny from his invention. And the father of three had to sell his home last year and move his family to rented accommodation after closing his struggling furniture business. New documents filed by Apple in a court case show it acknowledges him as the father of the iPod. Apple even flew Mr. Kramer to its California headquarters to give evidence in its defense during a legal wrangle with another firm, Burst.com, which claimed it held patents to technology in the iPod and deserved a cut of Apple's $159 billion, with a B, dollars in profits. Mr. Kramer invented and built the device in 1979 when he was just 23. His invention, called the iXi, stored only 3.5 minutes of music on a chip, but Mr. Kramer rightly believed its capacity would improve. His sketches at the time show a credit card-sized player with a rectangular screen and a central menu button to scroll through a selection of music tracks, very similar to the iPod. He took out a worldwide patent and set up a company to develop the idea. But in 1988, after a boardroom split, he was unable to raise the $100,000 needed to renew patents across 120 countries, and the technology became public property. And at this point, whoever denied him $100,000 probably should have been fired. Apple, by the way, sells about 100 iPods a minute. Apple used Mr. Kramer's patents and drawings to defend itself in the legal wrangle with Burst last September, and he gave evidence under fire from Burst's lawyers. Mr. Kramer said, "I was up a ladder painting when I got the call from a lady with an American accent from Apple, saying she was the head of legal affairs and they wanted to acknowledge the work that I had done. I must admit that at first I thought it was a wind-up by friends. But we spoke for some time, with me still up this ladder, slightly bewildered by it all, and she said Apple would like me to come to California to talk to them. Then I had to make a deposition in front of a court stenographer and videographer at a lawyer's office. The questioning by the Burst legal counsel there was tough, 10 hours of it, but I was happy to do it. He is now negotiating with Apple to gain some compensation for the copyright that he owns on the drawings." And let me just tell you this, Apple, you could get $1 billion in publicity by giving this guy some small, a hundredth of 1% is still $1 billion, right?
Buy his farm give him back for him.
Give him buy his house back. Exactly right. Buy his place back.
Give him $1 million.
Give him $1 million, whatever. I mean, the point is, this guy started the industry. You guys built off his patent. God bless you. You made the money on it. So there's no need to spit in his face. Give him a few bucks. Send him on his way. For you guys, a few bucks is like $10 million. So give him some money and move on. That's right. That's an accounting error for them.
Yeah.
That's a rounding error.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that's about the same time that Sony invented the Walkman, when Philips, was it 1963, Philips invented the cassette tape, and the Walkman came out in 77. So it was a logical progression to take the Walkman and replace the cassette tape with digital chips.
Right.
So the first guy to think of it usually makes the money.
Man, not in this case.
It took another 20 years.
Well, and it's the same thing Kramer says. It was 3.5 minutes of music. Who wants that? Now, of course, you can get that in a greeting card.
And I'm sorry, I still disagree with Try there last night, or Friday night. Because, you know, the technology and the miniaturization is what I was going after. He was splitting hairs. But, you know, what's packed in those carts, and we throw it away, is more technology that existed 15 years ago. I mean, before, you know, the circuit boards and everything else had to be huge. I mean, this is getting on a chip so small, you don't even feel it in the card. But yeah, it's got a little speaker in it. I mean, that whole technology is unbelievable. Right.
I have a friend whose job in college was replacing the tubes in the college's computer. And he would have a shopping cart full of tubes, and he would run up and down the aisles of the computer and replace a tube. And then they would run a test on that circuit. 1 + 1 = 1.999. Nope. Pull that tube, put a different one in, because you had to get the resistance correct or whatever.
It was an analog computer.
Right, it was an analog computer. And, okay, 1 + 1 = 2.01. Nope. Replace it with another one, 2.0. Okay, move on to the next.
When Woz was in town, Steve Wozniak was in town a couple years ago for Apple Cider's 25th anniversary. So it was 5 years ago. This is our 30th anniversary. He talked about in the mid-70s.
You're good at math.
Yeah, I know. In the mid-70s, your televisions came with schematic diagrams, and you would go down to the drugstore, and they had a vacuum tube tester, so you could fix your own television.
I used to do that with my dad all the time.
Key drugstore. Yep.
And that's how he was able to connect his computer to the television, because that was the biggest expense of most computers back then, was the monitor. And so the real unique thing about the first Apple is it plugged into your TV. Before, your TV had those little RF connector boxes that you might remember. Yep. He figured out how to wire right into the back of the television. Surprised he didn't kill himself. 30,000 to 40,000 volts running through your television.
Well, you would actually attach it to the antenna. I remember the little TV boxes, and I took a look at that thing, and I thought, that can't be right. And then I read, because you got the schematics and the directions with that, too. Yeah. You plugged it into the antenna wires, and then you turned to whichever channel it was, 2 or 3 or whatever it was at the time. And then it made sense to me, because all it was doing was converting the digital signal to an analog signal to be picked up by the antennas. It was pretty cool, actually. It was very, very cool.
For its time, yeah. You know, I mean, you got
and I well remember sitting down, booting up the Apple, and clicking the dial to channel 3, you know?
Right.
Click, 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 click.
Not to mention the Atari 2600 video games we all had.
Sure.
Same thing.
Same thing.
But, you know, to continue down the path of the memory lane down 1979, that was the same year I was an engineering student at the U of R. Friend of mine and I figured out a way to put a video panel on a dashboard of a car, and on the dashboard screen, it would show you a map of where you are in the city.
Nice.
And we had figured out to put all the transmitters and the traffic lights and the telephone poles on an as-needed basis.
Very nice.
We didn't know enough about satellites at the time, but if we only had known how to do a patent then.
Exactly.
I would own the radio station in which we now sit.
And that's the big problem. Most engineers and most computer people in general are not business people. That's where we lose.
That's what happened with Apple. Woz was the engineer. He figured out how to make the chips, and Jobs thought, hey, we could sell this.
Yep.
Woz was just giving it away. People wanted it. Yep. Here's what
yep.
I did.
Yep, yep. And that's Bill Gates. He's not really all that good a programmer, as we've all seen, those of us who used the early Microsoft Basic.
His big contribution was thinking you should pay for the crap I wrote.
Exactly.
Don't come to the homebrew meeting with 10 copies of my Basic. You should pay me for it.
Right.
Thus beginning the great open source movement. Thank you, Bill Gates.
Exactly right.
That's what it was before then. The computer room, this giant room, there was a drawer with sheets of paper in it. And if you needed code, look in the drawer.
Right.
If you could make that code better, good for you. Put it back
Replace
in the drawer.
It with your code. Exactly right. Exactly right. And that movement, of course, still alive today. And it is the open source movement. There are still millions and millions of people doing open source and
open
a lot more of them.
OpenOffice is a prime example of that.
OpenOffice does everything I personally need to do in any sort of word processor, spreadsheet, or whatever, a presentation program, database, everything.
Yeah. I mean,
and nobody that I trade documents with knows that I'm not on Microsoft Office. And yet OpenOffice was 100% free.
Yeah,
and updates regularly, and it's a great
product. $500. If you go for just the basic version of Office, what is it, 2007 now?
Right.
You're looking to drop $400 to $500.
Well, the sneaky buggers now have that home and student version.
Yes.
Three licenses for $150.
It's still $150 I don't have to spend.
Right, but we jokingly call that the crack method of marketing.
Right.
Give it to them cheap, and then when they get to a business, they have to buy the $400 version.
Right. Well, that's why we're seeing Linux come into businesses so much nowadays. You know, it's a lot of people on their resume, Linux is first now. And it's 5 years ago, you didn't see any Linux except for the hardcore militant open source fanatics.
Because if they can do that, then they can definitely move on to whether it's a Windows or a Mac platform.
Right.
Yeah, 5 years ago, those Linux guys were the guys you all saw at the Abundance Food Market, the health food place.
Exactly right. And those
now it's everybody.
Right. And they were just one step above the ham geeks.
And I like the Abundance Food Market.
Yes, so do I. But yeah, that's one of those things that is moving on significantly. And one of the things that's causing that to happen is this new phenomenon of the netbook. The very, very low-cost, small, lightweight laptop that really doesn't have a lot of power and really doesn't have a lot of the high-end stuff, the oomph that everybody's looking for. And yet, it does everything you need to do on a daily basis.
You know, I have mixed feelings about those netbooks because essentially, you get the same amount of power you get in the Gateway that I bought back in 97,
yeah.
which I ultimately upgraded to 64 megabytes.
Right.
But at the time, it ran Windows 95, which I upgraded to 98, and it ran Windows, I'm sorry, I meant to say Office.
Right.
And it did all the things that I wanted to run. But now, with the netbook, I can do all those same things with a similarly powered computer, but I must have access to the internet somehow.
Right.
and I wish there was a happy medium. Can I get something as low-powered as I used to run without requiring me to be within range of a signal?
Well, you don't have to be in range of it. It depends on what you're using.
Okay.
With some of them, they just run XP or Linux. And you're better off with Linux. It runs a lot faster.
Of course.
With Linux. But in that particular case, you can put whatever you want on it. Now, for example, let's say you're running, and well, let's go to Linux because there are more choices there. There's a word processor called Abbey Word.
Right.
Which is available both for Windows and Linux. And I think for the Mac, but I'm not sure.
It is for the Mac as well.
And it's very lightweight. And while it's not very high end, it's the 90-10 rule or the 80-20 rule if you prefer.
Right.
You know,
it would do anybody's college paper.
Right. Exactly.
Maybe not
right.
a doctoral thesis, but in any undergrad work it would do.
Right, right, right. And certainly if you're writing letters or memos or whatever, it does all of that. Under Linux, there's a thing called Gnumeric. With a G, GN numeric, and it's a small but certainly intensely viable spreadsheet. And it works great.
Okay.
So again, you've got the word processor and the spreadsheet. You don't have the presentation piece.
But then again, neither did my Gateway 10 years ago.
Exactly. So
let's be fair.
Right. So you've got pretty much all of those features, and the whole thing is like $100.
So
or they're working toward $100.
They're powerful enough to hold these applications internally
yes.
and allow me to work at the baseball field where I'm watching my kids play.
Yep, exactly right.
Okay.
And equally importantly, as time goes on, the big thing is the SSDs, the solid state drives,
yep.
and the amount of RAM you put in them, and the battery. That's the part we really need to talk about. But for the other two, you can hold a lot of that. You can get a 64 gig SSD card fairly inexpensively now, and you can get a couple of gigs of RAM, and there's your operating system. You can put damn small Linux in 50 meg. Right? The whole thing.
Minus applications, but...
No, including all the applications. Go to damnsmalllinux.org or DSL...
I think you're right, but that's compressed. Once you uncompress it, you're at more than 50 megs. But I don't remember the number.
But it doesn't matter. If you put it on your drive, I can stick it on a thumb drive.
Okay.
Put it in my machine and boot from that, and I am running Linux.
Oh, and then decompress the application on the fly as you need it.
As I need it.
Okay.
Because you're decompressing from RAM, which is a lot faster. It's still going to be slower than...
No platters to move.
Right. It's still slower than a full-blown version. But on the other hand, the entire box cost me $100.
Right.
I'm willing to wait an extra third of a second for my application to start.
That's very big of you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Is that a subtle...
And
that
that's,
joke?
What? That's been the big... criticism against what's becoming known as cloud computing,
right?
Something like Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets, is you can do all this stuff on the internet, but you have to be on the internet,
right?
And we don't have completely ubiquitous, you know, Wi-Fi where you can get the internet anywhere.
But they're working on that. Yeah, and if you don't think Google's not working on that, you're crazy. They've got one of the cities in California. They've begun a wireless, a ubiquitous wireless project. You can get things like Clearwire.
Qualcomm just released a new product they're calling Gobi, Global Mobile Internet. It's a basically cellular modem for your computer that runs HSDPA and EVDO, so it runs on any network anywhere in the world. You can buy them today. You know, Sprint makes one, Verizon makes one, AT&T makes one, but it only works on their network.
Right.
So now this new one from Qualcomm works on any network, and now you're using the cellular network to get on the internet.
Right.
It's slower than Wi-Fi, but you don't have to find a Wi-Fi hotspot.
But again, if what you're really doing is writing paper, doing a spreadsheet, you know, maybe
scoring
looking something
game.
Up, right, scoring the ball game, whatever that is, if you're not trying to run... Second Life or, you know...
I'm going to take you to a Red Wings game next season.
Play a game. Okay. I love the Red Wings. I play a game, whatever, online. As long as you're not doing those kind of things, you've got more than enough speed. You can do your email. You can write your report or your papers or whatever it is you're doing and work with a box that's only $100. And because everything is stored on the cloud, if the thing breaks or you lose it, you haven't lost anything. I know people who are already buying them to take on trips in case the TSA takes them away from the airport.
Have you known of that to happen yet? Do you know anybody that has
I don't personally know anybody,
okay.
no.
No. Waiting. I'd like to hear about the first.
But it's been reported. It's been reported as having happened.
I want to know somebody.
Right.
Not a friend of a friend of a friend.
Right. But the point is now I've lost this. You know what? It's $100 and there's absolutely no data on it. Absolutely none.
And you bringing up batteries again, you started to get to that before.
Yeah.
If you're required to be on the internet wirelessly, then you're using up more battery power than you would otherwise need, as opposed to having all your applications on your machine.
Right. And yes, but that really continues to be the real problem, generally speaking, with the energy crisis in America. Our batteries won't make our cars run for a full day or for a full week. Our batteries won't power our homes. Our batteries won't even power our laptops for more than a couple of hours. You know, you get these claims, 10 hours on our battery. Yes.
In standby mode.
Yes.
When you turn off the monitor and shut down the spinning hard drive. And
Right.
You don't want to do anything
otherwise, it's like
intensive.
An hour. You know, I get that. Okay, I get that. I have a Fujitsu laptop that lets you, and this is the one thing Apple doesn't do, which I hate about Apple. I cannot add a second battery.
What laptop allows you to add a second battery?
My Fujitsu.
There's a number
thing,
of them.
There's
out
a dozen
there.
Of them. Yeah, what you can do.
Apple used to do that. Yeah. You take the optical drive out, put the battery in.
Right, and that's it. Yep. You take out the optical drive, which, let's be honest, when the hell was the last time I really needed the optical drive while I was wandering around?
Until you buy a MacBook Air that doesn't have an optical drive, and then you complain that it doesn't have one.
No, I'm never going to buy it.
You did.
Well,
you have to buy it externally.
Yeah, but then everything is external on a MacBook Air, right? So, and that's what I was really complaining about. You can't. There's nothing in the box.
You can buy a 6-cell or a 9-cell battery pack.
Right.
That was a good idea.
Well, yeah, but then that's bigger and bulkier and heavier. You can pull out the optical drive
and throw in a battery. You got the option.
And now I've got 6 hours on my bed. 6 hours. I can carry this thing around all day at work.
Yeah, you can carry
from meeting to meeting. No problem.
You can carry a second battery with you and replace it with the first battery when it wears out, but yeah, it's convenient to have a second battery sometimes.
But again, now I'm carrying something extra as opposed to
well, you're
it's
carrying
in
it
the
outside the case rather than inside the case, that's annoying.
Well, it's just a freedom. Like I said, you know, if you need that optical drive or you think you're going to, you can take it along with you. Otherwise, like you say, you just take the two batteries and you're good to go for a long time.
As a ham radio,
need it? Why? Like you say, if you're not going
to, right? And then I come back to my desk, I plug it in the cradle, walk away.
Yeah.
Or sit down and do more work because there's an external monitor and an external keyboard and external mouse on the cradle. Pop it in the cradle and I'm working again.
Some of them are getting like the docking stations and that.
That's what I'm saying. Docking station, cradle, same idea. And so that makes it, in a business world, we do that all the time. Mm-hmm. You got to go to a meeting, you pop it out of the cradle and go. You come back, you pop it in the cradle, and you're working on your desktop.
And that's where the Macs are becoming very nice in that you do the power cords.
Well, that's the way the police operate with their portable radios as well. They walk out with one battery, and they come back and they swap it with another battery. But that battery lasts their whole shift.
Right.
It's the same thing with ham radio operators. You always carry a spare battery pack with you, but it's in the glove compartment. It's in the trunk. When you need it, you go back and swap it. You're not carrying around two batteries all the time.
But here I don't have to carry around anything but one laptop.
I did just find a company called Battery Geek that makes external batteries for the Apples. So you carry a second battery
again,
with you and plug
external.
It in. Right. But you don't have to swap them. You just plug it in and
well,
you get
six more
hours.
Well, for me, because I walk with a cane, I've only got the one hand. So I'm either throwing a bag over my shoulder all the time, or I'm juggling stuff, or, you know, is that a battery in your pocket, or are you glad to see me?
Ooh,
one or the other. Right. No, trust me, it's a battery. In your case, it'll always be a battery. Whereas with this thing, I've just got one laptop, which I hold in my hand and walk, and I'm done.
But it's heavier because you've got extra battery in it.
Not that much. It's a very light laptop to begin with. Well, all right, it's a little heavier. But even so, I would rather have the hours. That's my trade-off. I'd rather have an extra pound and an extra 3.5 hours.
Let's talk about the Kindle. Doesn't the display on the Kindle use an extremely low power?
Right.
So if we had a laptop made with that type of display, we could prolong our battery life.
The problem with that is
the Kindle has no backlight, so you have to use natural light.
It uses natural light. It's black and white only, and the what do they call it? The refresh is very slow.
So what's interesting is there's almost no refresh as we're used to that word, and it doesn't when it displays it's a static image. It displays an image and then takes no power to keep that image displayed. But when you switch pages and want a new image, it wipes it white and then paints the next page on it. So right. Some people can't get used to
but
that.
But the
flickering.
Persistence is also pretty terrible. When you change a page, it bleeds the old page.
Right.
And then the new page appears and the old page slowly fades.
Okay, now, that's today's technology.
Well, right. And it's all black and white. And so you're not going to see that in a laptop until it's color and fast.
Well, you say, but it's black and white. I remember when I ran my Atari computer and all the IBM people said, well,
used to color now.
My IBM doesn't need color because it's a business computer.
Right. So I completely understand that. I don't particularly care about color one way or the other, although it's very nice when I'm editing code to have the code color different colors. But try selling that in today's business world. You're going to have a much more limited market.
Well, you sell it by battery life.
Right. You sell it by battery life and things like that, but still. There's a new company, I can't remember the name, it just came out with an 8.5 by 11 inch liquid paper display. So that was actually very, very cool. We had there was a thing of it in an article in the paper the other day. It's, you know, you can see a whole like newspaper page kind of thing, you know, above the fold. And then, you know, hit the button, it's like flipping the paper over and seeing the bottom half. On the wide, and it's a whole new thing that's come out, and again, it's not for regular computing, but it's for reading books and newspapers and newsreader stuff, and you know, you're not going to do Miro from the sense of video, but you can certainly do it from the sense of text. You know, put an RSS feed reader.
Right.
You know, I've got to tell you, though, I love Miro. I think Miro is
a great
product. I've used it for a long time, and I'm very impressed
and
with it.
And I failed to mention, that's available for all platforms, Windows, right. Linux, and Mac.
Right. All right. The pain is over. We are pretty much done for another week. First, let me thank the folks at Wham who give us this opportunity to stay in your ear. Even though the bills are on the air, I particularly want to thank Alex Vanderweel, who has generously given of her time and talent and ability to come in here and do all this stuff.
Oh, anything for you. Well, just about anything. As long as it only, you know.
Yeah, see, now the disclaimers come out. Exactly. This offer void anywhere and everywhere all the time. But thank you, Alex. It's the thought that counts.
It only qualifies Sundays 10 to maybe 1-ish. Let's see what time it is.
All right, that's it. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel. I'm Nick Francesco, and you have been listening to the second, the world's only second webcast of Soundbites. Thank you all so much. I think we're live next week, aren't we? No?
3 weeks.
All right, 3 weeks. We'll be doing this again next week, and then we'll be live again. So thank you all, and we'll see you next week on the web. And for those of you who are listening to this, you just missed our Second Life. Our Second Life cast. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That one even more good than last time.